Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi guys, summer's finally here and I'm looking forward to catching up with friends and family as much as possible. At all those get-togethers, I like to have the option of being able to moderate my alcohol intake without missing out on the occasion. That's when I love a refreshing Atopia and Tonic. It's an award-winning non-alcoholic spirit with all the flavour of a premium gin but less than 0.5% alcohol. Our friends at Atopia have given us an exclusive offer for Open Mind listeners. Just head over to clinkspirits.com and use the code OPENMIND at checkout to get £5 off a bottle of Atopia and free shipping. Enjoy the summer with a bit of mindful moderation. This episode includes references to eating disorders, specifically bulimia. Please only listen if you feel comfortable. Hi and welcome to Open Mind with me, Frankie Bridge. Today I'm joined by empowerment and mindset mentor Megan Rhones Lane. Megan is the host of Word, the podcast, and founder of The Thrive Project, a 10-week long online course of self-improvement. Hi Megan.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, you?
I'm really good, thank you, yeah.
I always find those like little intros when it's about you really embarrassing.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, what's she saying? Oh, me.
And how are you? Thanks for coming on.
Oh, you're so welcome, thank you. It's actually really good that we're doing this today because today I decided to take a mental health day completely randomly, so it fits in with the theme.
Oh, really? But surely that means you shouldn't be working today?
Well, no, I feel like this podcast is perfect for it because I get to talk, right? I get to part of my mental health, like self-care routine is to like offload and talk. I feel like it's so good for your mind to do that. So this definitely doesn't feel like work.
So what is a mental health day then?
Well, I mean, I think it's one of those things when you notice that your mental health starts to slip. The first thing I do now is I take a mental health day. Like, I just go for it. I'm like, and I feel like it's one thing that I really wish I'd learned to do sooner. And I think in past jobs and stuff where you've been under like management and you've had certain, you know, hours to be in and it's been quite strict and stuff, like the jobs don't give you mental health days. Like, even to call in sick, I saw this thing on Instagram the other day that was like, you know, how many times have you needed to take a day off work because of your mental health and had to make up a lie about something else because it's not seen as like an okay thing to call in and be like, hey, I'm really struggling with my mental health today. I need to take the day off. You don't get given that. So I think now working for myself, it's something that I actually do as soon as I feel myself slipping. And it's just a really feeling into what is it that I need. You know, asking yourself, that's such an important question. Like, what do I actually need right now? And I went on holiday the other week, and ever since I got back, I've not been in a routine. So for me, it's all about creating more routine. And I did a meditation this morning. I haven't meditated for a few weeks, and I'll probably take a bath later, and maybe I'll watch a film or something, you know? So it's just like giving yourself all that stuff that you need and often don't give yourself because you feel too guilty.
I always find after a holiday, I feel off. And I always feel guilty for it because I think I've just been away. I've had an amazing time. I've had a break. I should come back and feel great. But I often feel the complete opposite. It's so weird. Like, I find I really get the holiday blues, but I don't think I did before. So weird.
It is weird. And I think when you are like in a really good routine and a really good schedule, and like even though you're like, oh, I need a break, actually the holiday throws you off that completely. So when you get back, you're just like, hang on, what was I doing? Where was I? My to-do list is like over there and I'm scattered. And that's how I felt since I got back. It's like my energy feels like really scattered and all over the place. So you kind of have to like reset and reel it in.
You said earlier about now you work for yourself, so you're an empowerment coach. What is that?
Okay, so basically it is, I just feel like what I fell into this, it wasn't something that I always wanted to do or like planned to do, but I've been on a massive journey of reclaiming my power. And I feel like so many of us have given our power away to so many different people and places and things over our lives. Like, you know how it feels to have bulimia. Like, that is the ultimate, like, that was the biggest giveaway of my power in the world, to diet culture, to other people's opinions of me, to needing to be a certain size and a certain weight. And that journey was massively about taking my power back. And I had the same thing. I used to have panic attacks, and I gave my power away to so many things, like the things that I was scared of that really weren't really a threat to me, but like that I was super, super scared of. Like, for example, even just getting on the tube or going on public transport or being in social situations, you know, I gave my power away to all of those things. And I felt really weak and not in control of my own life and stuck and small and scared. And my life's journey from literally my early 20s now has been about reclaiming that power. And that's exactly what I want to do for women. Like, I can't give them their power back, but I can tell them how to remember how powerful they are. And I can guide them back to finding their own power, because it comes from within us. And we can't get it from anywhere else. And only we can reach that deep within us to find it. So I guess my job is just to remind women that that's within them and help them to access it again.
Because I think often we do try and find these things through other people and other things, don't we? Like the same with happiness. We kind of turn to another person or a situation or an object and go, that will be when I will feel X or whatever. And I suppose being taught how to look for that yourself just completely makes sense, because we all know really deep down that we're the only people that can change our lives and how we feel, really, at the end of the day. So how did you find yours then?
It's been a real journey of going within. I think I just had to give up the fight of going without, like you were saying. There were so many different things that I was trying to find my power in, or trying to find a sense of peace in, trying to find a sense of happiness in, from going out. Especially in my uni days, it was going out and it was doing drugs and drinking a lot. And that was for me to feel some kind of connection to other people, or some kind of connection that gives you, that social life gives, that you think it gives you, right? It's a false sense of connection. Mm. The real connection is the deep connection with yourself. That's what we try to get when we go out there doing drugs and alcohol and things like that, because we're clutching at this feeling of contentment, this feeling of fulfillment, and it doesn't work. So that was the one thing. The first thing that I did was like, I removed myself from that life, from that culture that was really quite soul destroying. And then I went traveling. I realized that I then also tried to get my happiness and my contentment and my power from relationships. And actually that again made me feel terrible and depleted me, and started looking into like a relationship attachment styles, and I had a very anxious attachment style, and there was a lot of jealousy and insecurity. And I think I just looked around at my life at the places where I had the most pain and the most anxiety and stress, and I was like, okay, where is my invitation to heal from this? And I just went in. Like, I bought books, I listened to podcasts, I journaled, I meditated. Like, there was I guess there's never really any end to it. There's still things that come up for me now that I'm working on. So yeah, it was all, I think meditation was probably the biggest thing for me.
So would you say that you're religious now or spiritual?
Spiritual. I definitely felt very uncomfortable with religion growing up, and the word God freaked me out, and I was like, I can't, you know. Church always felt really fearful. There was a lot of like fear around, like, if you do anything wrong and if you sin and going to hell and all this stuff, that didn't feel to me like it was in alignment with what really religion was trying to teach about God and love. And it just, something didn't sit right with me even as a child. So I rejected religion entirely. And actually I rediscovered God or the universe or source or whatever you want to call it. Doesn't matter what name you give it, because really it goes so far beyond a name. But, you know, I rediscovered that through spirituality. And actually, spirituality has no rules. It's about radical forgiveness and radical acceptance and non-judgment. So you can find yourself in any moment in your life And there's nothing to say like this is wrong or sinful or bad. It's like, just forgive yourself and show yourself so much compassion. And that is the real path back to love and happiness and joy, you know, and it doesn't have rules and regulations and restrictions. And that's why I went from religion to spirituality, because it was like, it just felt so much more expansive and so much more limitless and liberating, you know.
Yeah, I suppose we put enough pressure on ourselves anyway, don't we? We often feel so much guilt and if we mess up and things like that. And if you're religious as well, like you say, there are a lot of wrongs and rights and do's and don'ts. And I suppose, yeah, spirit is a bit more open-minded and a bit more...
It's more enjoyable. And I think one thing that we all struggle with anyway is like guilt and shame. Like guilt and shame, like even around mental health struggles... Like that meaning that we attach to, you know, feeling bad or doing something that maybe is out of character for us or whatever, like it's the guilt and shame that actually just amplifies it even more and the stigma around mental health, things like that. So, and I think that's one thing that I felt with church. There was a lot of guilt and shame and fear in it that just like didn't feel good. So, yeah, spirituality for me has been the ultimate, the best. I love it.
You speak quite openly about your mental health on social media. Have you always been that way, or was there a moment where you thought, I need to be more honest online?
There was definitely a tipping point, because when I was younger, maybe when I first started social media, which would have been about five years ago or so now, there was definitely way more pressure to show up and be perfect. That was like literally what social media was. It was so different from what it is now. And I didn't feel like I could openly talk about my mental health at all. And to be honest, I didn't really talk about my mental health in life, never mind on social media. Like, I didn't talk about it with my parents. I didn't talk about it with friends, really. It just wasn't something, even at school, like, there was never anything about mental health at school. I had this urge where I felt, like, intuitively pulled towards sharing more. And it was very scary. I remember going through that and thinking my ego hated it. It was like, I can't be seen to be weak. I can't be seen to be vulnerable. If I talk about this, I'm going to seem like an attention seeker. There was so much fear around sharing it. But I think when something is part of your path, there's no other option. You know, when you feel so called to do something that you don't actually have a choice, like it's going to happen anyway. So I just went with that. I went with that calling. I went with that urge to do it. And it was the best thing I ever did. Honestly. And of course there was like people who, you know, found it really uncomfortable and projected their hate onto me and projected their fear onto me and tried to shame me for being open and being vulnerable and being honest and talking about emotions that aren't just constant joy and happiness, and to talk about panic attacks and anxiety and, you know, all of that stuff. Of course there was people that didn't like it, but for me, if it could help one person to get through a hard time or a bad day or to see the light or to feel less alone, then it was 100% worth it. And I think that's one of the things on social media, like being vulnerable is like, it saves people. We save each other through our vulnerability, you know, it literally saves lives.
And you have a daughter. Do you feel more passionate about this now since having her? Because obviously we're kind of setting a precedent for her when she's older.
100%. And I think one of the massive turning points for me to post about body confidence and to stop editing my photos and to start really showing the realities of like motherhood and how my body changed was after I had her and during pregnancy. But after I had her, it like my passion for it like skyrocketed, because I just was so determined to not let her grow up in a world that I grew up in, that we grew up in. You know, it was hard. We grew up in a crazy time.
I know. When you say when you were pregnant, how did you find being pregnant? Were you able to enjoy it, or did you find like the body changing hard?
The body changing was so hard. I had recovered from bulimia at this point, but as soon as I started to gain weight in pregnancy, my bulimia came back, which was really difficult to navigate, because the last thing in the world I wanted to do was put the baby in danger. And, you know, I wanted to be healthy and happy and like enjoy pregnancy. So that was a huge test for me, and I managed to overcome it quite quickly, but I definitely relapsed in pregnancy, and it was hard. But there came a point where I just surrendered. I surrendered to the weight gain. I surrendered to the fact that I was eating 4 breakfasts a day and I couldn't stop eating. I surrendered to the stretch marks and everything else that was going on. And actually then, once I did that, once I just accepted that my body was supposed to do this, like it was doing its thing and it was working perfectly, no matter how it looked, everything changed then in pregnancy. And that was a huge tipping point for me as well, like mentally and emotionally.
And have you felt with the bulimia, has it come back after pregnancy, or have you felt that tipping point has kind of kept it at bay?
Yeah, now that I have Esme, there's this thing within me where I'm like, I have to embody every single aspect of what I want her to kind of like feel inspired by within me. Like I can't be self-sabotaging. I can't disrespect my body in that way. I just can't do it anymore. It's just not who I am. I feel like I've stepped fully into a different version of me, and the thought of having bulimia or going back to that way of life is just so alien to me now. And I do think that ended once I gave birth to Esme.
Are you planning a party, a barbecue, or even a garden soiree this summer? Now we're getting used to hosting again, we have to cater to all the needs of our guests. Lots of my friends and family don't like to drink too much alcohol, but love the taste and the celebration, and there's no reason why they should lose out. I always make sure to have a bottle of Atopia on hand so I can rustle up a quick Atopia and tonic for the designated drivers, expectant mothers, or those who just want to take a night off. And it even goes down well with the big drinkers too. I believe moderation shouldn't come with a compromise. To get started on your cocktail journey, head over to Atopia Spirits to get inspired.
And how have you found your journey with acceptance of your body since, you know, after you've had the baby? Like, I always felt like while you were pregnant, it was hard, but you kind of accepted it because you had a bump and whatever. And then when that bump goes, it's a bit like, oh, okay, this is what I've got now.
It was a crazy journey looking in the mirror and seeing like this body that wasn't mine. Well, it was mine, but it didn't look like mine. And that kind of like getting used to that. And also like, you know, even to lose weight after pregnancy and to still not feel the same, and my boobs have changed, and I have cellulite now that I didn't have before pregnancy that has never gone away. And there's been so many different things that I've just had to learn to accept. Do I love them all the time? No. Do I have amazing body days sometimes where I'm like, yes, like I feel so sexy and so amazing. And even with cellulite, even with my boob being saggier and all those things, like I still feel amazing. And then I have days where, you know, I look in the mirror and I want to have a little cry. But also, you know, one of the biggest parts of the path has been appreciating myself as more than a body. Like, I'm not just a body. I'm not just a face. I'm so much more. And, like, the people who love me for who I am, my family, my friends, like, they don't see me as a body and a face. They see me for my soul. They see me for the parts of me that are the most lovable and most interesting, which go so far beyond my outer shell. And I think that's one of the best things that you could ever do for your body image, is to know that you're more than a body.
And when once you'd had Esme, you had a partner at the time when you were pregnant and she was born, and then at some point, because I remember seeing it on your socials, you guys split up. Did you find that difficult to share?
Yeah, I did. I definitely did. Back then though, right, that's about 3 years ago now, because she's just turned 3, I definitely was an oversharer on social media. I don't do that anymore. I keep so much of my life private now. And I think that I just got into this habit of constantly feeling like I had no boundaries. And I constantly felt like I had to kind of, I owed everyone an explanation. I owed everyone, you know, reasons for why I was doing certain things. And I had to go into detail about my life. And I was very apologetic. Like, I watched stories from back then and I'm like, hey, everyone, I'm so sorry that I've not updated you on this. And I'm like, why was I apologizing? What did I think that I owed people about my life at this time? And I think that was really hard for me because as a bit of an oversharer and a people pleaser and someone that didn't have boundaries on social media, I was going through this heartbreaking time. And then I had this added pressure of being like, I have to tell everyone. You know, people have been following us as a couple for so long, and now they're wondering, but people would message me and be like, why haven't you updated us on the relationship? What's going on? And I'd be like, I'm so sorry. I just don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. So yeah, that was a really difficult time. I felt like I owed everyone an explanation and people were disappointed in me, you know?
For not sharing.
No, like for breaking up with my partner at the time and choosing
really?
To, yeah. People were really disappointed in me and like telling me how they thought it was the wrong choice and really like putting their opinions on my life. But to be honest, like I have to say, I feel like I invited that level of like people's interference and like interest. I invited that in by being an oversharer. So they were super invested in my life. They thought they knew everything about my life, and they did know quite a lot, maybe not everything, but to a point where it gave them this sense of like, they had a right to tell me what to do with my life, you know? Mm-hmm. And I do believe, like, yeah, okay, that's out of order from people. Like, they're crossing a boundary, but I didn't have those boundaries in the first place, you know?
Yeah. And did you feel shame when you had to share that at that time?
Yeah, there was a lot of shame in going through the breakup. There was a lot of shame in, you know, I grew up with my mum and dad together. They're not together now, but they were together for 30-odd years. You know, I grew up with that family, that house, that safe household situation that I really valued and felt so grateful for. And I didn't want to get to take that away from Esme. But I also wanted to be happy, and I wasn't happy. So it was really difficult. There was a lot of shame and a lot of guilt, and I was trying to do what was best for me, but also what was best for her. There was a lot of, but you know, at the end of the day, like my happiness was best for her. And that's one of the big lessons that I learned, was that like for her to be around arguments and bitterness and resentment and a relationship that was breaking down with two people who couldn't seem to figure it out was way, way worse for her than now she has two happy households with parents that we get on so well. We're like really good mates now, me and her dad. So she gets to see this beautiful friendship between us. She has two peaceful homes, and I don't feel any guilt or shame now, but I had to work through that at the time for sure.
Yeah. And do you find that easier now to tell other people? And, you know, because I always think I've wanted to have some form of single parent, whether it was a man or a woman, on the podcast for a while, because I feel like it's something that doesn't get spoken about that often. You know, especially with social media, we see a lot of happy couples, happy families, and I often feel like that story kind of goes under the radar. And I just feel like, as you know, a podcast that's all about mental health and well-being, it was an important subject to be spoken about. And I think it's funny in this day and age, you know, it's not, when I was at school, most parents were still together, you know, happily or unhappily. And now it's so much more common. But do you feel like there's still a slight stigma around it, or have you not found that?
I think there is certain people, there's certain people with a more old fashioned mindset who grew up maybe like I did. Will definitely have that judgment. But at the end of the day, I feel like the society that we live in right now, we are breaking through so many boundaries, through so many walls. We're liberating ourselves from the rules, the expectation, the shame, the things that people used to stay in marriages for like literally 50 years miserable because they felt like they couldn't leave someone because they'd made this promise. And I just find that so crazy, like how small and how much we kind of like shrunk down our lives because we felt so like almost like shackled by these invisible handcuffs from society. And I think that there is, you know, beautiful opportunities and lives that exist beyond these walls of these rules and stuff. So I mean, I'm a living proof of that. You know, I'm happier now, he's happier now, Esme is happier. There's no shame in it, and if anybody else puts that shame onto me, that's theirs to deal with. Like, it's not mine.
Did it take you a while to kind of accept it yourself? Like, you know, straight after, I'm guessing you either moved or he moved, whatever, a lot must have changed for you all of a sudden. That must have been really difficult to all of a sudden just be you and Esme.
Yeah, it was really what was really difficult for me, the hardest thing was having to split time. We do 50-50. Esme's dad is an incredible father, and you know, he was very clear from the onset. He was like, I need to spend half the time with her. Like, I don't want to be absent from her life. I want to be included as much as possible. And I found that really difficult because I was used to being with her every day. And she was one when we broke up. So I'd just finished breastfeeding. That was so difficult. But at the same time, like, because our relationship is actually so healthy and on such good terms, like, I can go around there any day that I want. I can FaceTime her whenever I want. Like, we'll do little days out and stuff. Like, it's, you know, it's, I feel like now I feel very much at peace with how much I get to see her and how much access I still have to her. There's no like weird rules or like, you know, there's no distance from her. Like, it's really healthy. We live near each other as well and everything. So it's all good.
Mm. Yeah, it must have been hard at first to be like, okay, so you're going now for a few days.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd got a bit used to not seeing her because she'd been in nursery for a few months. Mm-hmm. So I'd kind of got a bit more used to like the fact that obviously I was working and she would be out for the day. It was the nights where I would go to bed and she wasn't in the house, and I would literally just lie there and I would have this like empty feeling in my heart. Like, it was really hard. But you just get, you adapt, you know, humans adapt and we figure shit out, and we're really good at that. So
yeah. And I guess now you get to enjoy those moments a bit now. You can get stuff done, you can appreciate it rather than
100%. There is, you know, there is, as much as I would rather have Esme all the time,
mm-hmm.
there is an opportunity. I can get more work done. I can, you know, I can go see friends and things like that in the time when I don't have her. So there is ways of keeping myself busy when I miss her, for sure.
Someone said, how do you pull yourself out of those negative body days? So you said you still do have them. How do you move on from them when they happen?
I actually take all my clothes off and dance in the mirror naked.
Do you?
It's the most amazing thing in the world. Like, and I literally, honestly, like, I've had so much shit to deal with around dancing. Like, I always grew up like thinking, oh, I'm not a good dancer, and you know, I shouldn't dance, and I would only ever dance like in nightclubs when I was really pissed, and it would take me of like a few drinks to even get comfortable enough to move my body on the dance floor. And then I did like a course online, and part of it was about like getting into your power, was about getting into your feminine, sexy energy and dancing, right? And I just fell in love with it. So I started like dancing in the mirror, putting on my favorite music, and like really watching yourself in the mirror. God, it's so confronting. There's so much embarrassment and so much shame and so much cringe. And once you move past that, oh my God, the other side is freedom. So if I'm having a bad body image day, like connecting to my body and loving her radically for what she does for me beyond how she looks is just so powerful. So yeah, dancing naked in the mirror is like everything.
I love that. I guess that is something I've spoken about before. Like, we forget what our bodies can do. So we only look at them of what they look like. And it's like, God, our bodies are insane. They're constantly working. They're constantly doing something. They're the reason we're here. And we lose sight of that. It's so weird. It's so weird.
We literally couldn't be having this conversation right now if we weren't both living inside a body that allowed our souls to even be here. So, you know, to hate the thing that is the reason that you're here is just like, it's craziness. But it also makes sense because we live in this world that literally everything in marketing, everything in the outside world, like, is pretty much designed to make us hate ourselves so that they can sell us a solution. So coming back home to ourselves and remembering how fantastic and powerful, incredible we are, it's a lifelong journey. It takes a lot of balls to go there.
And then someone's asked, any advice on self-sabotage, how to stop it?
Self-sabotage will naturally stop when you increase your sense of self-worth, because we sabotage ourselves because we think we're not worthy, right? So when things start to go well, if our self-worth is down here and things start to kind of go past that self-worth level, so things start to get really good, we're like, shit, this isn't right. My self-worth only says I deserve this much, but I've got more. So I'm going to do something to mess that up. I'm going to bring myself back down here so I can prove to myself that my beliefs about my self-worth are true. I only deserve this much. So really, self-sabotage, it's not really about trying to stop self-sabotaging. It's about cultivating a deeper inner sense of self-worth and knowing that your worth is infinite. You deserve the world. You deserve everything. Like, there's no limits to what you deserve. But your beliefs will meet you wherever you are. So if you believe you're not worthy, you will mess things up without even realizing you're doing it. It's subconscious. So yeah, self-sabotage, the cure for self-sabotage is to work on your sense of self-worth. So yeah, that for me, sense. Meditation, journaling, dancing naked in the mirror, spending time alone, you know, turn your phone off and just have like a big self-care day. It's like really get into like feeling just so worthy of love. And it takes a while. Unlearning diet culture, unlearning all of the reasons why you think you're not lovable. Yeah, and then naturally self-sabotage will kind of like melt away from your life and you won't do it anymore.
It's undoing so much of what you've learned over so many years, isn't it? It's hard.
Yeah, because we start out with all the self, as children, you know, we are curious, we are non-judgmental, we are kind, we are open, we are present. Like as children, we're connected. We are just like perfectly connected. And then as adults, we learn things that remove us from that deep inner natural connection that we are, have always had. So really, being an adult and trying to get back to feelings of joy and acceptance and forgiveness and happiness and all that is literally like a peeling away of layers of fear that have been given to us over the years. And that's why self-development and this journey is a journey of going within, because we can't find it outside of ourselves. We already are everything we want to be, which is just buried underneath layers of fear.
So at the end of every show, I ask a guest to give their three main bits of advice, which I always think is so mean, because if someone did this to me, I'd be like, oh, I can't think of anything. So what would your three bits of advice be to give to people that are looking to empower themselves?
Ooh, okay. My three main tips for feeling empowered in yourself are: get some really, really good boundaries in place in your life. Like, do the work on boundaries. Write down all of the areas of your life where you feel like people's energy leaks in, where you give too much away, where you struggle to say no, where you feel guilt and shame for being yourself. And then start to build some really healthy boundaries and walls around your energy. Not to shut people out, not to close your heart. You do it from a place of love. And then you protect your energy. You get to keep your energy. And actually, you create a life where people respect you more. And you create relationships where, you know, some relationships might actually drop off, because if people can't respect your boundaries, they naturally will fall off from your life. So there may be a bit of loss involved when you start laying down boundaries. But that is like, boundaries are everything for your power. I would say definitely dance in the mirror. Even if you don't want to do it naked, just start dancing. Just start connecting to your body. Like, you have, your body is so powerful. Like, all of your power is within your body. And if you can make that a daily habit, I just did an online course called Soul School, and the girls in that every morning had to do an embodiment practice of dancing around the kitchen or the lounge or whatever, first thing in the morning to this playlist. And it changed, like, over like the 3 months we were working together, it changed their lives. Like, they won't stop doing it now. And I do it every morning too. And it's just, it really does put you in the most amazing mood. It helps you feel so confident and sexy. And it takes a while. But like I said to you before, once you break through the embarrassment and the cringe and the fear, it's really empowering. And then number three, I don't want to be boring, but I'm going to say meditate. Meditation has become such a kind of like woo-woo thing of like, oh, meditate. But actually, like, even to just take 10 minutes every morning or every evening. And meditation doesn't have to be sitting still in silence. You can do anything. Like, you could go on a walk, actually, and just not take your phone and just really absorb the nature around you and look at, you know, really feel your feet on the floor when you're walking. Like, it's just like about being present in life. Even if you just take 10 minutes a day to be really radically present. Like, sometimes I'll do it with my coffee. Like, I'll be drinking my coffee and I'll just be really present with it. Like, what does it taste like? What's the temperature like? How does it feel? I can feel it going down my throat and into my stomach. It's that like those moments of like radical presence, that you could even just stare at a flower and just appreciate its beauty. There's so many ways to do it, but it really reminds you of like how powerful that presence is when you're not distracted or on your phone or constantly striving. There's this like, gosh, there's just so much strength and power and resilience that you can tap into when you come into the present moment.
Yeah, because I think that's such an amazing point to make, because I'm someone that's never been able to meditate. Leaving me on my own with my own thoughts in silence just does not help me at all. And I've always I used to see that as a failure, like as someone that suffers with mental health and whatever, you know, they always say to meditate, and it's just never worked for me. So the thought of like sitting and thinking about something and just watching, you know, something else or being aware of your body is sounds like a much easier way to do that. So
it doesn't have to be so rigid. Like, I think that's the problem, is we think meditation has to be this thing where you sit cross-legged and you just sit in silence. And like, you can do that. I love doing that. I think there comes a point, like, it's hard at first, it gets easier, but like to like watch, even like watch a candle, watch the flame burn and flicker. Like, there's so many things that you can do to make meditation more enjoyable. And really, it's just it's more just a moment of presence rather than making it mean anything else, you know, and putting pressure on yourself.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me. I've wanted to get you on the podcast for a while now. I just love what you do online. I think you're just so open and honest, and it's so nice and refreshing to talk to someone that just seems to, I don't know, you're just so aware of yourself and happy to share that with everyone. So thank you so much. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your mental health day. I feel really bad that you've worked on your mental health day, but
honestly, this is so important to me to talk about this stuff. It doesn't feel like work at all. I'm going to go have a bath and relax. But thank you so much for having me. Like, it's an absolute honour to be on here. So thanks.
Thanks. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Open Mind. I hope this has been really helpful to you. If you have been affected by the episode or would like to find any more information regarding mental health, then please head over to mind.org.uk. Please follow me on Instagram and look out for my stories, where I reveal each new guest and collect all of your fantastic questions to put forward to them. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time. Are you trying to cut down on alcohol to boost your well-being? Well, personally, I love going out for drinks with my friends, but hate how I feel the morning after. And that's why I decided to moderate my alcohol intake with Atopia. They have an ultra-low alcohol spirit that tastes just as good as my usual drink without any of the nasty side effects or embarrassing photos. Looking after yourself is important, so why not take this month to get focused on your well-being? Join me in cutting down on alcohol intake today and start making the most out of every occasion with no regrets. Looking after yourself is important, so why not take this month to get focused on your well-being? Join me in cutting down on alcohol intake today and start making the most out of every occasion with no regrets. Wake up with a spring in your step and your well-being in check. Available from Waitrose and online.